Welcome to Ink and Impact, the podcast for Christian writers who want to impact their readers. I'm your host, Daylene Bickle, and each week I'll help you keep a pulse on the publishing industry, showcase Christian authors and their books, and share ways you can improve your craft and magnify your message. Whether you're a fiction or nonfiction writer, traditionally or indie published, established, or just starting out, this podcast is for you. Welcome to Ink and Impact. Today, I am excited to interview my virtual friend, Dawn Klinge, a Christian writer who writes historical fiction, particularly inspirational romance novels. Dawn is a Pacific Northwest native who loves a rainy day, a hot cup of coffee, and a good book to get lost in. Sounds like my good friend. Yes, I love to do that as well. This wife and mom to two young adults is often inspired by true personal and historical accounts. Dawn is a member of the American Christian Fiction Writers Association. Sorrento Girl is her debut novel, the first in the Historic Hotels collection, which includes Sorrento Girl, Biltmore Girl, and Palmer Girl. And we'll be speaking more about those with Dawn in today's episode. But first, I want to welcome you. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes. So one question that I ask all of my guests is, what is one book in addition to the Bible that has impacted you in some way, whether it was in your childhood or more recently as an adult?
I love that question. There's so many books that have impacted me, but I think about the first Christian fiction books that I really fell in love with and that showed me what Christian fiction could be. And that I actually have a copy. The Mitford series by Jan Karen. I discovered those when I was pregnant with my daughter, my first child. And I loved the sense of community that, like, I felt like I knew the town that she wrote. And I loved the characters. And I loved everything about the way she wrote and the sense of I got. And the way that the faith message was just very organic. It was just a part of their lives. It wasn't preachy. And so I decided then that's how I want to tell stories. And so I think it had a pretty big impact. I wanted to make people feel the way I felt when I read those books.
Yes. Isn't that the truth? So did that plant the seed for you to become a writer, or had you wanted to become a writer before that?
Since I was little, I wanted to be a writer. I had my first story published in a magazine when I was probably about 10. It was a little story about my teddy bear, and that was what hooked me. And then when I got older, I kind of thought, you know, I didn't think it was a possibility. I thought that was just something that other people did. And it took me a long time to come around to the fact that, no, I can be a writer.
And you are with multiple books. Yes. So what was the biggest challenge you had to overcome when you were writing your first book?
I think it was the confidence. Thinking of myself as a writer, that I can do this, and that writers are not just being a writer is not unattainable. It's just one step at a time, and just trust God through the process, and He'll show me what to do.
So I am familiar with your Historic Hotel series, and I've read the last in the series. It's a great standalone. But I also look forward to reading the first two. But I was curious, did you intend for the very first one, The Sorrento Girl, to be a standalone, or did you always have a plan for a series?
I did intend for it to be a standalone. And then I fell in love with one of the characters, one of the minor characters, and I wanted to write her story too. So the books, they are standalone, but there is a thread, a family thread that runs through them. And
So what was the driving force to write Sorrento Girl? Because it's about a hotel. So was it a hotel that you've always been fascinated by, or you read an article about it, or how did you hone in on that?
I knew that I wanted to write a historical story set in Seattle. I love Seattle. That was my home up until a few months ago. And so I just started doing research and looking through books about the history of Seattle. And I came upon some pictures of the Sorrento Hotel, discovered it's one of the oldest hotels in Seattle. And I thought, oh, I bet there's some interesting stories about that. So I just started digging deeper. And when I found a story about during the Depression in the 30s, a university nearby, at the time it was called Seattle College, it's now Seattle University, they were growing and they needed a place to house their women students. And they, during the Depression, there wasn't a lot of tourism. And so the hotel was struggling. And so they were able to house their women in the Sorrento Hotel. And I remember thinking, how cool would that be? And so that was kind of the basis of why she lived in the hotel. And I just wanted to tell the story of these girls, and particularly the character of Anne. And
yeah, so the stories, they sometimes find us, don't they? We read something and it just clicks, and we know that's the story we're meant to tell. So I was curious too. So I know you said that you intended it to be standalone, and then you fell in love with a minor character and created this series. And you were kind of organically finding about the hotel. Do you ever think that you niched yourself too much? I know as authors, we're always told you niche down on your genre. And so you've really done a great job of that, right? You're not just, you know, historical fiction. You're not just a romance author. You're a Christian historical inspirational romance hotel collection author, right? And I think that's fabulous, because it makes sense when you're reading these books, it makes sense. But did you ever worry about that being too microscopic?
Well, I'm about to find out, because my next story does not take place at a hotel and it's not historical. So I'm curious how that will be received. I do have a lot. A funny thing that people like to say to me is, if they've gone and traveled to a historic hotel that they love, I often get told, oh, you should write about this hotel, or you should write about that hotel. So that's kind of, it makes me happy that people think of me when they think of historic hotels. But
and you never know, there may be more collections down the road. So you were able to do the research about Seattle, and you knew a little bit about Seattle. Mm-hmm. So the other two hotels were set, one's in the Midwest in Chicago, one's on the East Coast in New York City. Did that affect your research at all? Did that make it any more difficult?
I mean, I definitely know Seattle better than Chicago or New York. But I had spent time in each of those cities. I had to do more research. I used Google Street View a lot to really get a feel for, I would actually walk the neighborhoods that I was writing about.
That's a great idea.
And I intended to actually spend time in those cities while I was writing, but it ended up that I was writing during the pandemic. So Seattle was definitely easier to write about just because it's close to me.
Sure. So I'm curious, how long does it typically take for you to write a book?
So the three hotel books, those were about 9 months each from start to finish, with the research all the way through the editing. And
great.
So, but right now I'm taking a bit longer for my current one. I've given myself permission to rest a little more this year. And
yes. Yes. And if you actually happen to listen to the previous episode on Ink and Impact, we had guest author Melanie Redd, who spoke about rest, especially for writers. So yes, that's definitely something we all need to take advantage of periodically, for sure. So when you were writing these and they took about 9 months, did you set yourself a goal? Like, were you self-publishing and you could set whatever deadline you wanted, or were you working with a publishing company and they set the goal?
I did have some deadlines set in, even though I was self-publishing, because I hired an editor and I had to work within her time frame too. So I knew that I had to have it done when she was ready for it. And so, yeah, that I think that was good to have that deadline. And
yes, one thing I've found whenever I've been writing books is if you don't have a deadline, it does not get written. You just keep finding excuses to procrastinate. So those deadlines are so important, whether you're self-publishing or traditionally publishing. And I'm so happy to hear you say that you got an editor, because it's so tempting as self-published authors to kind of save on money, right? Sometimes that's why we choose to do self-publishing, but editing, finding a quality editor is so important, because ultimately, we are writing for the Lord, and we want to write in excellence, and we want to make sure that what we're putting out for our readers is quality writing, right? That can point toward Him. And editors are trained to find things that we can overlook when we're writing. When we're so ingrained in our story, we tend to skim over when we're rereading it for the 30th time, right? And we can fix some or miss some things that they'll be able to fix, and they'll see holes in the story that we might not have. So editing is super, super important. And I encourage any author to always utilize an editor. So yeah. Great.
They are worth their weight in gold.
They really are. So during this time, 9 months, that's a significant time. It's almost a year. And during that time, I'm sure there are challenges and different things that go on. Was there a verse of scripture that maintained you throughout your writing process?
Since my first book that I wrote, which was nonfiction, I've had this verse that has really guided me. Proverbs 3:5-6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. That's my life verse, I think. It's just that guides me through everything.
Such a good one. Yes. So when you're writing these books, and ultimately we want to share these with our readers, and we want to, offer them something, in what way did you hope to impact your readers with your books?
I wanted to show that, like I was talking about the Jan Karen books, the Mitford series, I got a great source of comfort out of those. She writes about some things that are, the world can be dark and scary sometimes, but there's always light, and you can always find light, and God is always there. And I wanted to convey that same source of comfort. And I write about some hard things. My books take place during times of turmoil in history and some dark things. Writing about the Great Depression sounds like it could be depressing. But I found actually that it was very encouraging to me. As I did my research, I saw that there was a lot of joy to be found, and it wasn't all dark and depressing. There was a lot of light and joy and good things that came out of that time period as well. Yes. So,
and the same can be said for today as well, right?
Yes.
Lots of challenges right now, and I'm sure it'll go down in history as being a very dark time. But as we know, God is still at work, and He offers so much comfort and peace and joy and hope for the future, right? And we know that this earth isn't our home, right? We will eventually have eternal rest in Him in heaven. So that's what a wonderful hope to look forward to. Mm-hmm. So I know I had shared a few prep questions, to give you an idea of what the interview was going to rotate around. But I just thought of something. Whenever I first found you and we became friends online and Instagram, was right around the time that Biltmore Girl was coming out, and you hosted an Instagram book club. And I was wondering if you could just kind of touch on that for our fellow listeners, our authors out there that might not have thought of that or heard of that. Can you explain kind of what that is?
Yeah, that was really fun. So it was just each month I would choose I would choose a book, historical romance, so that they would know what genre to expect. And I just invited people to join, and it was you can form little Instagram group, like a group message thing, and we just communicated that way. And I had some questions at the end of the month, to prompt discussion of the book. And occasionally throughout the month, I would also kind of remind people, maybe give some fun little backstory that was related to the book, but didn't give any spoilers away, just to keep people on track and try to provide some other stuff to make the book fun and add some interest. So
you, how long did you run the book club?
That was probably, I think we, about 6 months.
So you selected like 5 books from other authors leading up mm-hmm. to your launch for Biltmore mm-hmm. Girl. And then the month of your launch was always, I remember you had some, before the actual launch hit, you were asking giving little hints about the history and the location and little things like that, like you said, without giving it away. And it was so much fun and it garnered a lot of engagement with the people in that club. I was really surprised at how many people got really excited about it, because I'm a fan of historical fiction, and it was great to see how many other people out there on Instagram wanted to talk about it as well.
That was fun. It's fun finding other people who love what you love. And
yes. So, Instagram isn't all just about reels and, throwing a post up there. You can really mm-hmm. engage with your readers. So I encourage you to try that. That was a lot of fun. So as we've been talking through your writing process, you started out, what was the first book that you wrote? You said you wrote a nonfiction book. Mm-hmm. What was that one?
That was called Look to Jesus, How to Let Go of Worry and Trust God. Like that. Anxiety has always been a part of my life, it's been a learning experience, how to trust God more deeply. And so that's what that was about.
So then you wrote that book and then the 3 hotel books. Mm-hmm. How have you seen God at work in your entire writing journey, from nonfiction to fiction and all of it?
I think that theme of trusting God is going to be a theme throughout my life and my writing journey. Just every step of the way, he's provided what I've needed, and I'm just learning to trust him more and more. He has never let me down. So.
Yes. Love that. So I know you've shared quite a lot with us today, and I'm going to obviously share all links to your books and everything that we've talked about, but I didn't know if you had one final piece of advice or encouragement you can share with our listeners.
I just want to say how important it is as a writer. Writing is a very solitary activity, but find your tribe, find other writers. That's so important. My critique group, that is extremely important. Having other eyes on your writing, having just the accountability. I haven't had a deadline with this last book, and I haven't had a lot of, I've been tired, basically. There's been a lot of other family stuff going on in my personal life. But having that critique group and that accountability has really kept me consistent, because I know that every 3 weeks I've got to have something to turn in. I don't want to say I have nothing.
Right.
So,
and I want to clarify too, to people mm-hmm. that a lot of times the word critique may, they're going to nitpick it to death, but the critique groups that are so encouraging. Yes, they're going to find some errors and they'll point them out, but in a loving way. Right. And it is encouraging, and it does hold you accountable. And it's all those things that are going to benefit you and improve your writing. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Wonderful. So I would love for people to know how they can learn more about you and find where they can find your books.
Well, my website, www.donklinge.com. has links to, they're available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, usual places online. So, but my home base online is donklinge.com.
And then on social, is there a platform you prefer there?
My favorite platform is Instagram. Is it where okay. I met you?
Okay. And do you have your books handy? Do you want to hold those up so people can see those if they're watching on YouTube?
So my first one is Sorrento Girl. And then I wrote Palmer Girl, which actually goes backwards. So this one takes place in the 1890s. Okay. And Sorrento Girl is in the 30s. And then my final one was Biltmore Girl. This is the 1960s.
Yes.
And there's a family thread that connects them. And there's a Seattle thread that connects them.
That's great. Yeah. Don't give too much away, but those are great. And those covers are gorgeous. Those really are. So congratulations on that.
I love my cover designer. She did a good job.
Yeah. They're worth the money too. Just like editors, yes. Aren't they?
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Dawn. I have had so much fun.
I've had fun too. So thank you.
Industry update. As I mentioned previously, June is audiobook month, so I thought I'd share another audiobook tidbit this week as we close out the month. Recently, it was announced that audiobook company Findaway has been acquired by Spotify. And according to a recent Publishers Weekly article titled, Spotify Completes Findaway Purchase, Spotify wishes to, quote, diversify its business beyond music streaming, end quote, by offering its listeners access to audiobooks. While most of us may be more familiar with Amazon's Audible for audiobook access and creation, Findaway appears to be another quality option for indie authors. You can learn more about them at findawayvoices.com. On a different yet related note, the book publishing industry as a whole is still experiencing a paper shortage. From everything I've been reading, it doesn't seem that we'll get back to pre-pandemic paper volumes anytime soon, if ever. Why? Because in order to stay financially solvent, several print paper companies in the United States have already, or are in the process of, retooling their machinery to create different paper products. Since the conversion of equipment runs in the millions of dollars, it's highly unlikely that they'll revert back to print paper manufacturing in the future. So how is this affecting authors? There are three things that immediately come to mind. Longer production times, fewer paper options, and higher costs. This then just might prompt more authors and publishers to promote alternate book options such as ebooks and, you guessed it, audiobooks. To learn more about the status of the paper industry, read the Target Report, Paper Industry in Transition. And links to all of these articles will be provided on the show notes at inkandimpact.com. Listener opportunities. Today is the last day to enter for a chance to win a signed print copy of Just Rest, a 90-Day Devotional. If you didn't listen to episode 3 with Melanie Redd, you'll definitely want to go back and listen to all of her phenomenal tips for writers and how we can achieve rest. But in that interview, she also shared about how you can be entered to win a copy of her book. There are three copies going to be given away, so three lucky winners. So be sure that you enter before the stroke of midnight tonight. And that's Eastern time. In the United States, and you do have to be a United States resident, but be sure to go there, or you can read the show notes for full details at inkandimpact.com. Today is also the last day to participate in the Ink and Impact question of the month, which is, do you write short or long books, meaning those under 400 pages or over 400 pages? And more specifically, do you know which your readers prefer? For the full context behind this question, be sure to check out episode 2. To participate, simply email your response to info@inkandimpact.com. Finally, I want to remind you that you can register for free for the Inkwell. Sometimes, as the 1960s Four Seasons song says, silence is golden. In this case, it's the secret sauce for writing productivity. Each Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I host the Inkwell, a free live writing session for Christian writers. Now in its second year, we continue to gather together, chat for a few minutes at the beginning and the end, and spend 40 minutes writing our respective works in silence. I encourage you to give it a try and see for yourself how productive you can be. The link will be in the show notes. On next week's episode of Ink and Impact, I'll be discussing the three benefits of sharing content before your book is published. Over the last few weeks, several aspiring authors have asked me a series of related questions regarding sharing content. They ask, is it okay to post about the content of my manuscript before it's published? How much content can I share on my blog or on social media without giving away the essence of my book? And what if other people steal my ideas or content before my book is published? I'm going to address each of these questions next week, so be sure to tune in. What do you think? Did you enjoy this episode? Be sure to go to inkandimpact.com to subscribe so you automatically get notified of the latest episodes on your favorite podcast platform. And if you know a fellow Christian writer, please share this episode with them as well. Again, go to inkandimpact.com. That's it for today, fellow pen pusher. Remember, don't just write a book, make an impact.